Yesterday, we spoke to Merle Mansfield, who's program director of the Zero Dropout Campaign, and we were discussing the high number of school dropouts that the country is facing in the last two decades. And they also say that the school attendance is at its lowest in two decades. Reports suggest that fewer students return to school this year compared to last year before the pandemic, and that the dropout rate has tripled. It's alarming. Well, let's hear now from the Department of Basic Education as to what they attribute this problem to and if there are any solutions to it. Dr. Stephen Taylor, who's Director for the Research at the Department of Basic Education, is joining us. Thank you very much for joining us, and good morning, Dr. Taylor.
Good morning, Patricia, and good morning to the listeners.
What have you, as the Basic Education Department, attributed this high dropout rate at schools to?
Yes, well, I think it's in a way quite obvious that we're talking here about a change that's happened because of the pandemic and because of the disruptions to schooling that have been necessitated. You'll know that the estimate comes from the NIDS-CRAM survey, which compared attendance rates at school now to pre-pandemic levels. And as a result, we do see about three times as many children of age 7 to 17 who are not attending school. The big question, though, that I think we have is to whether this increase in non-attendance is to be regarded as kind of permanent drop out of school or sort of a temporary disengagement from school, possibly as a result of staying home with the plans to return when things are safer. So I think we need to monitor over time what's going to happen. But the big cause clearly is the pandemic and the disruptions that's being causing children to spend a lot more time at home or not attending school than normal. And we know that kind of disengagement is a kind of a factor that can lead to dropout over time.
So let's say all these factors are correct, Dr. Taylor, that, you know, some people are still a bit afraid of the pandemic and it's a temporary one. How do we then bring confidence back in parents and students who are no longer attending school to say, come back to school, it is vital? There are measures that the department have put in place to ensure that your safety is made priority.
Absolutely, and that's such an important thing that we need to all be doing. It's just get that information out that children really must get back in school. We're going back to everyday attendance now. I think it's a few things. Number one, the department has very strict protocols in place that most schools are following pretty closely around COVID-19 protocols. So there's mask wearing, there's sanitizing, there's attempts at social distancing. These things are in place. Secondly, I think the risk to children and the risks through children are actually quite low. I think that's been the very good news that all the research has been showing locally and internationally, is that children themselves are not at great risk. Then if we look at the risks to teachers and adults who may in turn get affected through schools being opening, it also seems as if children are not really contributing to a big transmission. We know that the timing of when schools have been open has not led to increases in virus spread in the country. And also now that teachers are largely vaccinated, I think we've really created, as far as possible, a safe situation for a full return to schooling. And I think that does need to get communicated, that the benefits of schooling now far outweigh the residual risks to health of having schools open.
Taking a look at the dropout rates, do we have percentages or ratios as to which quintiles have a higher dropout rate?
Well, historically, we do know that dropout rates are higher amongst socioeconomically poorer schools and contexts. But in terms of the analysis that's been done now and the estimate of increased dropout through the NIDS-CRAM survey, we haven't really been able to identify that in that kind of detail, but I think we can assume a similar pattern, that it's usually going to be in more vulnerable contexts where learning outcomes are also lower, because we do know that weak learning outcomes in the early grades is actually the biggest predictive factor of later dropout, because most dropout normally happens towards the end of high school, and so I think we can definitely expect that the problem will be worse in poorer contexts.
But if that's the case, then I suppose, yes, we can say COVID-19 is one of the shock, shock waves that has caused children to drop out. However, it can't be the only one. If the ratio is higher in the lower quintile schools, so the schools that have less infrastructure, a higher teacher to student ratio, they some of them have to be subjected to pit latrines, some of them don't even have running water, then it should not be COVID-19 that we're shielding behind. It should be there are structural issues that need to be fixed by the basic department, basic education department.
Yeah, but I think we need to just distinguish between the particular increase in dropout that we've seen now as a result of COVID-19 and the overall challenge of dropout that's been with us for a long time and that we still need to address. And that issue, the reasons, as you mentioned, are complex. For me, one can distinguish two main reasons. I like to think of the underlying vulnerability to being likely to drop out, which is largely seems to be caused by weak learning foundations, and then the sort of triggers to drop out that actually happen once children are in grades 10 and 11 largely. And those could be the things you referred to. They could be issues like pregnancy. It could be issues of other alternatives to schooling, like maybe trying to enter the labor market. There could be a whole host of things which maybe trigger dropouts. And so I think we need to continue addressing both of those problems. So in the long run, we absolutely have to improve learning outcomes so as to reduce a dropout in the later grades, so that more children arrive there well-equipped to complete matric. But then we need to continue with all our programs to address school safety, violence, improving the infrastructure, as you referred to, all of those things which can act as triggers towards the end, which just kind of sealed the deal in terms of dropout. But it's important to mention that aside from the pandemic now, the dropout rates over time have been steadily improving. And this is largely because of those kinds of program measures like feeding more than 9 million children every day, like school health programs, like the no-fee policy to remove the financial constraints to attending school, like the provision of scholar transport programs, etc. So I think it's just important to see this in the context of a current shock to the system through the disruptions to schooling that have been caused. But in the long run, we are doing those things and we have been seeing improvements, but the problem is not yet solved.
One of my concerns, Dr. Taylor, when I look at education that children who are in Gauteng in the suburban areas get, and then I go back home in rural KwaZulu-Natal and I look at same grade, same age, and the education they get. The textbooks may be the same, maybe the DBE books, but the ability, and I'm talking about foundation phase here, I'm not even talking about high school, the ability to understand, execute, and utilize these DBE books that are available for all primary school children in the public sector, it's not the same. So could this not be one of the elements? The fact that you are not enticed to learn what needs to be learned in a particular area, and those are the lower quintiles, that could then stem not wanting to go to school. Because I see even children younger than the age of 16 in rural areas are not attending school. Sometimes the teachers are not there. If you ask them, why not? There's no teacher at school. Well, we still get corporal punishment at school. I really don't understand what this teacher is saying, because they are trying to teach me something that is written in English, but in isiZulu from a DBE book. And then you ask yourself, who at the basic education department sits down or goes into these schools in the lower quintiles and looks at what the fundamental issues are?
Yeah, look, I think you put your finger on the most important part of the challenge, which is improving the foundational teaching of literacy and numeracy in those early grades. I think the provision of those books has been really important, but it goes beyond that. We need to improve the quality of learning and teaching, and that's not easy to do at scale. And I agree with you. It's in the lower quintile schools where the problems are greatest. And that is where our attention is, on finding ways to support teachers better, to provide better structured support to the implementation of the curriculum, to focus in particular on home language literacy and reading, like you've mentioned, so that children learn to read in their home language and therefore are equipped to learn a second language, which usually is English, and cope when English becomes the language of instruction for some of the later grades in their other subjects. So You're right. I think the diagnosis is definitely right. And a lot of things that we're doing in the department, and certainly from where I sit in research, we're trying to find ways to improve those exact things. So I agree with you. I just think it's a long-term process that that we are chipping away at.
Well, I'm glad that it's something that you are addressing as the Department of Basic Education. Another point here, I've seen that there are bursaries out again, I think via Funza Lushaka, for more educators. And I know there's an aim for 2030 to increase the number of educators. Are we going to see the ratio of teachers to students, becoming better in our public education system?
Yeah, we definitely are doing programs like Funza Lushaka Bursary to increase the numbers of especially young teachers entering the system. I think there's some evidence of recent improvements in the quality of pre-service training, and therefore programs like that are important. It's also important to mention that learner-teacher ratios are fairly favorable, and there's room for improvements, especially in certain phases, but it's also about teacher utilization. So class sizes might be somewhat large, even in schools where the learner-teacher ratio is not too bad, and that speaks to prioritizing, say, the foundation phase and the way teachers are utilized. So we do have some problems in terms of we will need to keep our finger on the pulse and ensuring that we are providing enough teachers into the system. But then we also need to look at the way teachers are utilized to ensure that, especially in the foundation phase, we are addressing problems of large class sizes that we do see in some contexts.
I think that needs to be a priority. Safety, but also, the fact that if there are too big a classes and the teachers can't cope, then this added strain and stress on the educators themselves, then it trickles down to the students. What is the role that parents and guardians should be playing to ensure that there is a lesser dropout rate in the education system?
I think definitely ensuring that children are going back to school now as far as possible. And I think having schools fully open should also help parents and guardians, because many of them have suffered a big burden of child support during this time. But certainly just ensuring that children are attending school, and then continuing as they always should do with supporting on homework and supporting their child's development along the way. It remains a crucially important role that parents have to play. That remains.
So it's a crucial role. And I ask this question because we are so quick to say Department of Basic Education limit these numbers when it comes to a dropout. But it's not just the basic education's responsibility. We as guardians, community members and parents need to also play our part in ensuring that children go back to school. How do we make education cool again, Dr. Taylor? Please tell us, because those who have dropped out, especially the older kids, the teenagers, they're like, school is boring, you know? So how do we make it cool? How do we ensure that our children go back and want to learn these STEM subjects?
Sure. I think, that's what inspirational teachers are good at, right? They're good at not just covering the content, but showing you how it can be used in the real world. And I think showing children that there's a pathway. I think children need to believe that there is a future through this. They need to see the link between what they're studying in school and university courses and opportunities in the labor market. And I think that speaks to what you've said. It goes beyond even the classroom. It's a societal issue in the way we value education, the way we see and create work opportunities and expand access to work opportunities and for people to see that. So it's about inspiring children. I think the department will continue to try to do that. I think some of the remote learning opportunities, the radio broadcasts, the TV broadcasts have been trying to plug a gap as well in that respect. That's the challenge, I guess, that every teacher faces, to try to inspire the children with the value of what they're learning.
Let me go to the lines. I've got Colin, who's in Cape Town. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning, Patricia. Good morning, Doctor. First of all, I want to ask, what is the quality of our teachers, some of our teachers? Because I've heard on radio stations, some teachers are teaching 3, 4, up to 5 subjects. I know in my days when I went to school in the 60s, you had your maths teacher, your science teacher, your English, and so each teacher was specialized in that subject. But now I can't understand, especially in government schools, I hear a teacher is teaching an overcrowded class and three or four different subjects. So can that teacher be qualified in all those subjects or what?
Good question, Colin. Good question.
I listen on the radio.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Dr. Taylor.
Sure. I think in terms of subject specializations, I'm not aware of any changes in recent times there, but you know, it depends on the phase that teachers are teaching. So in the foundation phase, usually teachers, one teacher will teach the same class, home language literacy, first additional language literacy, numeracy, as well as life orientation, life skills. So in that phase, teachers are more generalists. But in the higher grades, teachers remain, they have their subject specializations. So I'm not aware of a change there in recent times. And when it comes to the quality of teachers, it's a complex question. You know, there's things like their own knowledge of their subject, things like their knowledge of how to teach the subject, which is a different thing. And we no doubt have some weaknesses. Different studies will point to different weaknesses in the system that we need to continually work on. And I think both through pre-service training, I think there is some evidence that some of the more recent cohorts of teachers are having improved content knowledge in their subjects. And then especially when it comes to in-service support for teachers, that's really where your kind of pedagogical methods, like their knowledge of how to teach different topics, comes in, and where we need to keep supporting teachers.
Well, on that note, I'd like to thank you, Dr. Stephen Taylor, for joining us and just telling us what you are busy with at the Department of Basic Education. It seems there is hope, and we must hold on to that hope and trust that our young people will go back to school.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. It's 11:30. The ever-ready Uncle Luyanda Mawume is standing by to give us the news headlines.